Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Get It Off Your Breasts, the podcast which digs into all those issues really getting under your skin. I'm Emma Gannon.
And I'm Leanna Bird. And this week we're so delighted to be joined by filmmaker, actress and mother of four, Sadie Frost. We'll be discussing growing old gracefully, or should that be disgracefully, nuance in debate on TV and checking your partner's phone.
And if you do enjoy this episode, please don't forget to rate and review us. It really helps because other people can find us easily.
Joining us as our very special guest today is actor and filmmaker and good friend, Sadie Frost. Hello, Sadie.
Hiya.
Hi, thanks guys. So much for having us, not only on our podcast as a guest, but in your lovely room, and we just sat like cosily around a fire, and it's so nice and warm.
I know. I thought like on these kind of cold, dull winter nights, just all like make it all nice and intimate and friendly, and we've got the dogs and the cats and kids upstairs, we can be much more friendly.
Yeah, we've got Rosie the dog at our feet, just being super chill and super good as extra special guest. So as our guest, we will invite you first, as it's polite to do, to get something off your breasts. So what would you like to get off your breasts today?
Well, I mean, I find it very hard to be specific about anything. So when thinking about a topic was hard because I have so many things going on in my head. But I was just thinking this weekend about, I felt really under pressure about growing old gracefully and quite happy to kind of grow old disgracefully. I think having a 17-year-old daughter who is absolutely kind of beautiful and, you know, for me, it's like I really feel like I'm passing the baton to my four kids who are just kind of stepping into adulthood. And, you know, I think there's a lot of pressure when you're younger to deliver with work, to be ambitious, to, you know, just constantly prove yourself. I mean, I think I've definitely been a bit of a workaholic all my life, and I'm quite happy now to kind of step back and be a bit of a nerd, or just, you know, happy about retiring quite soon. And, you know, and when I kind of, when I look or feel a bit bad at this, and I've been looking in the mirror and thinking, like, how do some women do it, and how are they not actually aging? And then I looked at the Golden Globes, and women that were like always look so much older than me are now looking like 10 years younger than me. And I was talking to some friends about it, and they were talking about cosmetic surgery, and I'm just so squeamish, I couldn't actually do that. I mean, like the thought of like someone cutting me or scars or any kind of like kind of being intrusive. And so I just get a hoodie, and the hoodie's kind of getting kind of more and more zipped up, and more kind of the, you know, I've got this like little, just have my little eye, and it's fine. You can walk around like that. So no, I'm quite happy not to have the pressure and let my kids kind of get on with it, and I can just become an old hippie and just disappear and like live in a house with no mirrors. And I think the hardest thing about growing a bit older is you don't realise how your body isn't going to work as easy. I mean, you're a bit of a yoga fanatic, like me, and I've always loved doing exercise, it's really important to me, but it sounds like such a cliche, but you do get a little bit achy. But I think, you know, it's just basically coming to terms with things and accepting where you are now. I do sound like an old hippie.
Not at all. I mean, I think there's so much more pressure on women than men, first of all, but when you talk about like growing old gracefully and disgracefully, do you think it's more about the way people look and like a pressure to, especially as a woman who's in the public eye, to continue to look a certain way? Or do you think it's more about like how you behave, like that there's certain expectations of you to, you know, to act a certain way? Or I don't know, I feel like guys are kind of let off the hook a little bit, like if they want to go out and be a bit wild or be single, or I don't know, just do whatever they want to do, even if they're like at a certain age, like everyone just thinks it's like quite cool and like a bit of a cad. And whereas with women, it's like you almost have to like expect it to be like to behave a certain way and be like charming and graceful and all those sorts of things. And I don't know, do you think it's more about like looks or behavior?
I think it's about a bit about both, and different times, you know, there'd be weeks where you're kind of just feeling feeling a certain way and looking a certain way. But I think it's, you know, I've always felt a bit rebellious about how you're supposed to behave. So I've always wanted to do the opposite to what you're supposed to. Like, you know, when you're a mum and you've got small children and you're supposed to, you know, behave a certain way and you're supposed to look a certain, you know, we're conditioned to have to kind of fit into being a mother. And when you're a mother, you know, especially 20 years ago, having a young child, it was like, you shouldn't be going back to work. You know, and when I was doing the school run and I was a working mum and couldn't really hang out with the other parents or the other mothers, I was always felt as if I was letting my son down, that I couldn't actually kind of engage in that kind of thing. So I would be quite rebellious about the things I was supposed to be doing. Mm. And then there was a bit of me that was a bit resistant as I was getting older, and it was like, you're supposed to be growing up now. I was like, how do you do that? I can't grow up. I'm never going to grow up. And it was a worry for me because I was like, you know, I don't want to be one of those women that's kind of either in denial or not really just progressing or feeling like I'm on some kind of journey. And I think suddenly I started to feel different when my children got a bit older, because I want to be a good role model to them. Mm. And I wanted to be doing the right thing, not just for myself, but also for my kids. So it was like, I have to, you know, I want to be everything I'm achieving and showing them a kind of work ethic or a self-care ethic, and a loving and kind kind of, you know, messages to them about how to treat people. My drive is making sure that my four children are going to be really well-balanced, loving people, and that they're good people. So I think my behaviour changed because I felt that was my responsibility in life. It wasn't like, I think it's like about less about your ego and how you are. So, you know, so my behaviour is basically conditioned in a way by, you know, being a mother, but in a good way. So I'm kind of not so rebellious. I'm quite happy to conform because I think I'm quite happy to just kind of just chill out a bit.
I was thinking about this play I saw a while ago with, you know, Naomi, I can't pronounce her surname, but she's Hermione in the stage play of Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah.
She was in this play called Linda, and it's about a woman kind of growing slightly older. And basically the message I got from it was that she was kind of felt like she was becoming more and more invisible, like as she got older.
Oh, yeah.
And I've heard lots of my friends say that. And it feels like it kind of mirrors, I feel like, roles for women in films as well. Like the kind of, you know, there's like sketches that like Amy Schumer did about like you get to a certain age and then you kind of have to like go behind the scenes and not have any like big roles anymore. Do you think they correlate as well? Like, because I think that's not really fair. Like we should have roles for women of all ages all the time.
Absolutely. I think there's definitely, you do start to feel invisible and irrelevant as well, because there's a new generation of people that are becoming more, who, you know, more visible and relevant. But it's up to you, I think, to kind of push boundaries and maybe, you know, be creative in the way, you know, for me, like writing this, I'm writing a book at the moment, I'm writing it about a woman who's a bit older, who goes through all these issues, who's in her 40s and 50s, and about how you feel. And, you know, or I'm kind of trying to create things and, you know, co-writing one woman shows about, you know, so it's also up to not just us expecting to kind of have those parts there and those opportunities. We've got to kind of create them and because I think people do want to know about them, and it's a whole kind of area to explore.
Yeah, there's so many topics we don't talk about when it comes to like age, not just women, but just in general. Like Gillian Anderson wrote a book recently about how no one talks about menopause.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know what it was.
Well, it's such a stigma. And I know for me and probably a lot of our generation, my generation and young women's, with like, my mother didn't really talk about it much, but then it made me feel really uncomfortable the bit I did know about it. And then suddenly all your friends at the same time are all suddenly, it's on everyone's radar and everyone's freaking out and panicking. And you just notice that a lot of women around you, because people can start going through a peri, like at 40. So there suddenly becomes a whole different kind of behavioural pattern. Mm. And there isn't much said about it. But in the last, it was a bit like when I had postnatal depression with my children and was really, really ill, and no one talked about it. And it was just like, why are you depressed? And, you know, you've got a baby, you've got all the things you should have. Why are you just smiling and just cheer up and shut up, really? And I ended up having to be in hospital quite a lot because it was so bad and it was so crippling. I didn't know how to do anything. I mean, it's the amount of kind of, I think when you're that crippled by being postnatal, you can't do the like little things like pack a bag. Mm. I mean, the smallest things, and it just gets worse and worse unless it's dealt with. So the same thing, people didn't talk about that then. And then it became a kind of more and more topical, and same with the menopause, and there's a lot more kind of people talking about it.
Mm. I remember like watching for the first time when like Sex and the City came out, and I remember at the time like Samantha's character, who was obviously someone like, you certainly wouldn't say she was old, but she was like, you know, of an age whereby women are maybe expected to be like wanting to settle down or like wanting to have kids. And she was acting in many ways, I suppose, what you could call like disgracefully, like going out, partying, wanting to have flings, basically not really wanting to ever settle down, you know, drinking, all that sort of stuff. And I remember like just being so shocked at how refreshing it was to actually see a female character on TV that wasn't like a wife or a mother or like...
It made me want to be, I was like, I just want to be like 20 years older now. I want to be Samantha.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. It was almost like the opposite effect. Yeah.
You can have fun any age. My mom's 70 and she just has such a, you know, a wonderful life. And just, it's just, it's mainly not being kind of conditioned and thinking you have to be a certain way, because there's no certain way you have to be. If you're happy to just kind of take a bit of a back seat for a while and you know, as your kids are getting older. But then, you know, I want to be, there's so many other things that I want to be doing and exploring, because there's, you know, like I'm going to go to India to finish my book, and I'm going to go trekking in the Himalayas and doing, you know, there's all, I think you get more and more excited by life rather than just doing the kind of the usual. Mm-hmm.
But there is so much more like judgment, especially towards women. I remember, I think it was Lily Allen, and she was like in a, there was a snap of her, and it was like an awards ceremony or something, and she was obviously a bit pissed or whatever, and she was coming out, and there was like a photograph of her in like some tabloid, and basically everyone underneath it was going like, mother of two, what is she doing? It's so responsible. She's this, she's that. And she just went, no one ever says mother of two, father of two when you see Chris Martin having a drink.
Like, yeah.
No one ever bothers to like, no one ever judges in that way. And it does feel like we've got a long, like there may be visibility of women kind of acting a little bit more disgracefully and that being okay, which is great. But I feel like the judgment is still really there, especially within like certain parts of the media, and that kind of like, tut, 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 you're a woman, you're a mother, you're of an age, you shouldn't be out enjoying yourself, like is really hypocritical.
Absolutely. I mean, I had a lot of that, and you know, especially because the media kind of, well, especially, you know, they'll photograph someone like Lily Allen or if you're in the public eye, and then you might have gone out and gone out to your best friend's 40th birthday and had a really good time, but then that will be the one thing they write about. They haven't written about the, you know, the charity work you've done or the fact that you've been in doing your, you know, your kids' homework for 3 weeks and parents' evening or whatever, and then you go out and have a good time like everybody else, but there's so much judgment to a woman going out and having a good time, which is crazy, because if you stayed in all the time and just parented and just kind of sat behind a desk or whatever, you know, everyone's got to go out and have a good time and have a good old knees up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I saw I don't even know what surname to call her, but Cheryl, is it Tweedy now? Is that her surname now? Anyway, let's call her Cheryl. And she'd gone to like, it was a charity event, I think it was like a football, celebrity football match or something, and she turned up and it was the first thing that she'd gone to since her baby had been born. And it was like obviously a really nice event. It was a charity, and like the comments section underneath, people were just like, "She's just abandoning her babies. Why aren't you with your child?" And it was like, it's been about 3 months. She's probably been like with her child a hell of a lot, and this is like her thing that she's going to, and she's got like someone looking after her. And I just feel like it's so insane, the pressure. Like, and it's exactly like you're saying, you take that one moment in someone's life, and you don't see the 99% of the rest of their life when they're doing normal stuff, having like, you know, not necessarily saying she leads a normal life. I have no idea what kind of life she leads, but we don't know is the point.
Also, it's quite, I think, quite a positive thing to see like all sides of your parents, because my parents are like massive party animals, like they always have been. I remember having loads of different babysitters when I was younger, like not in a bad way, like I loved them, they were all really fun, you know, it's fun having babysitters, I didn't care, but they're such social like beings that I kind of think that's really cool. And I hope I have a massive network of friends when I'm that age as well.
And I've got always,
like I do now.
I've always got loads of respect. Like I actually, I don't know whether it's just my mindset or whether it's like a common thing, but I actually have almost the opposite. Like I'm slightly judgy maybe, which is like not a good thing. But if there's like someone I know who's basically like completely given up their career and like their social life and is just dedicating themselves to being like a wife and mother, there's a slight part of me that will maybe be judgy, which isn't fair either, because people should just do what the hell they want. Whereas if you see someone who's like, we've got a really good friend, Dawn, and I don't know, I just don't know how she does it, but she seems to balance like being a mum of two with like just pushing forward her career, like kind of like you actually, Sadie, and also like
she's having a social life.
Yeah, and like just also being a good friend as well, just and having a good relationship, like all these different things. And that's the kind of person that I go, like, I would never judge her for those things. I actually go, you're nailing it because you're getting that balance, and I don't know how you do it. And I'm really in awe of that.
Yeah, it's nice to kind of get that balance, but you kind of, there's so many different areas you've got to work, whether it be your career or being a mum or your friends or your, you know, it's hard to maintain it all. And I think, you know, one part of it that for me over the last few years has gone, it is kind of going, you know, I can't go out two or three times a week. It's just too, you know, if I want to get up at six and start working and writing, I need to be in bed at 9 or 10. And then every now and again, I'll have a fun night. And and that's, but then I like to kind of incorporate working with friends. So I, you know, my work is now my social, you know, I think we work in a very social way now. So that's creative, and I do a lot of things like that will kind of be fun to do. But it's a very confusing time, I think, you know, with Instagram, you know, and all these things and how we're supposed, you know, I try not to judge or compare myself and to do all the good things. And I do a lot of yoga and meditation and things like that. But by 9 o'clock, even in the morning, I feel like someone's throwing 25 darts at me, because already, like, I'm being, there's those, that anxiety of like, oh my God, and seeing that, that's happening, and like, oh my God, I didn't get invited to that, and oh my God, you know, and we, I think we're all, there's so many choices, we've all got access to so many things, and it's not a good thing, because it's like about, and I think the more that's happening to me, the more simple I want my life to be, because I find so much pleasure out of the, you know, you realise that, you know, it's your family that's the most important thing, and we can chase all these other things, and at the end of the day, you come back and you realise what you really need and what you really love, and what loves you, because I was definitely chasing a lot of things for a long time that was really pointless and had certain demons, and I think we all have demons, and it's how you deal with those demons and how you kind of, and that's the how you learn and become a better person. Like, it's sometimes to have postnatal depression or, you know, all the things we go through, and divorce, or, you know, when we lose parents, and it's how, you know, we get through that, and then not getting through it, being bitter and angry and twisted and resentful, coming out of it. And I think being a 50-year-old woman is, there's a this time is about really facing yourself, and it's how you want to face yourself. You can either face yourself by drinking two bottles of wine every night and staggering around Primrose Hill, or you can face it by, you know, doing yoga, meditation, and having lovely people around you and eating cake, or so it's just.
But isn't the point that, like, whatever of those options you choose to do, or a combination of both, like removing the judgment that we have of each other and actually allowing people and their closest loved ones, nearest and dearest, to actually decide whether or not that is the healthy thing for them, and whether that's okay, and us not putting pressure on anyone to follow like a set path is like the key.
Because I do think that sort of the whole having it all thing is scaring a lot of people, especially younger people, because they're thinking, how do you do all that? And actually, maybe it's easier to just pick like one avenue, because spinning all those plates, like, I don't know, it's kind of, it makes you think if it's possible.
There's a lot of anxiety involved, and you have to be slightly OCD to kind of, you know, be driving all those things. But that's why a lot of, like, I know a lot of my friends' kids who are now 30 are like my generations when we were 20, because they're still having to live at home. And that, you know, I think people's youth, you know, you grow up quicker in some ways, but then you have a long, you know, they're not having children as young, and, you know, people not having children till their 30s, whereas me and my friends, a lot of us were in our early 20s. And so you get a kind of longer, that's like
It's like extended childhood. Yeah.
Extended same youth. Type thing. Yeah. Or Peter Pan.
It's like even like a rail card now, you know, like student rail cards. I think you can get one now for like when you're up to 30. Because yeah. like mm. we like that's the age group that need discounts on mm. that.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sort of stuff. So I wanted to talk about how a lot of kind of mainstream TV outlets at the moment are still really obsessed with getting two really extreme points of view and kind of debating it live on TV. Mm. And I'm just thinking in this day and age with social media and podcasts like this one, and also just more nuanced conversations, why are we still having to have sort of like two really extreme boxes? So for example, I got asked on Good Morning Britain last week, and the topic was, is it time to ditch old words from the dictionary? So basically there's a petition going around at the moment which has like over 100,000 signed signatures, that basically the Oxford Dictionary are removing words such as acorn and bluebell. So what? Like quite well-known words.
Sad.
Really sad.
Acorn, but that's a thing. How can you remove it?
I know.
What are like, we going to call it?
There's loads of people called bluebell.
So loads of like natural
yeah,
kind
all
of
the
words.
Old-fashioned, you know, because it's...
Sort of old-fashioned.
Now it's just like smartphones and...
Exactly. So they're being replaced by modern words such as blog and chat room. And so anyway, they invited me to go on and be this like millennial sort of online... person who loves new words to say like it's so great that we're using lol and blog and let's get rid of old words. Anyway, I don't think that because like I'm a writer, I like words and I like old words, but I also think that we should introduce, you know, relevant new words. So essentially I just thought that debate is a bit, there's no room for any sort of nuance there. Do you think that we need to be kind of have less of those shows?
I definitely think that people are all about today headlines, and that's and also having a fight. So like you look at someone like Katie Hopkins, who's basically made her entire career out of saying controversial things that offend and upset a lot of people, and that turns into money for her ultimately. And so I feel like we're all trying to get like that clickbait. Everyone wants to get that, like, you know, how many listens or how many looks they're going to get on their website or whatever else. Mm. So everyone's trying to, like, no one's interested in a kind of... nuanced, like,
extended
middle ground
conversation.
Yeah, because in my experience anyway, most people tend to have like an opinion on things which kind of falls somewhere in the middle. Like, it's never black or white or left or right. You kind of, and also if you do have an opinion on something, a lot of people are open to discussing it and potentially changing it, but that doesn't make a great TV moment that's then going to get on Twitter and then going to get clicks.
Because I think being extremist in any way is being perpetuated by headlines, whether it's like the real liberal media or really like the Daily Mail and stuff like that. Like, I just feel that right now, especially with everything that's going on, we should be having more longer conversations where we can say, oh, I don't know. Actually, I don't know what I think about that.
But I think the kind of media is also encouraging everyone to be extremist and to kind of go in, you know, the way as well with, like, if you're on a computer and you're kind of researching things and the way it can kind of, if whatever you're typing in, it will give you two separate answers to, you know, so if you, it can kind of read your information. So if you type in Egypt and the kind of research you're researching, it'll give you a more of a left ring view, and if you were a different type of person, you'd put in other things in your computer, be reading right wing. So it then is conditioning us all then to become very separate as well, giving us, you know, very, very different views from them, how they think we are. So people are getting more and more conditioned about the information that they're reading because they think that's how, do you understand what I'm saying?
It's like a vicious cycle, because if you have a bit of a, you know, say you've got a bit of a right-wing point of view anyway, then the news feeds that you're going to get and the information is going to kind of fit your point of view rather than, because it'll,
rather than that being an open, will
bring up stuff that basically agrees with your point of view rather than, so like for me, I will probably more get recommended to read like a Guardian article over a Daily Express article, but that does put you in a bubble.
Rather than it being across the board.
Yeah, it's pushing us. Like there was that really scary thing, now I'm trying to remember exactly what it was, but it was in America, and there was basically like a protest. It was, they were saying that there was going to be like a new mosque or something to do with Muslims in this town in America, and then they were saying there was going to be a protest against it, and it basically ended up being like an actual like protest and anti-protest between like kind of more right-wing sort of white Americans and Muslim population. And then they found out that it was like a Russian bot that had generated it and put, like, was saying that it was the governor of this area, and it wasn't. And you just go like, it, like there's people who actually benefit from creating these two extremes now. And like, whether it's your Good Morning Britain who's going to get like loads of watchers, or it's Russia who's got God knows what agenda for it, but creating these kinds of divisions in our societies and pushing people to be more extreme is there's always a reason for it. And you have to look at like, why are they doing it? Like, is it money? Is it power? Is it political? And I think like when you get deep behind it, it's really quite cynical and scary.
It is scary. It makes me feel really uncomfortable and really anxious. And that's why I can't watch a lot of TV. And I don't, and you know, just going online makes me feel, you know, you feel dirty. There's a kind of, we're fed so much information that you just know is kind of complete bollocks. And, you know, I don't kind of want it to be filling my head, and I like watching the news. I know what's going. I want to know what's going on, but it's very toxic. It's very ugly, and if you kind of want to, it affects us all, doesn't it? There's so many negative things. So, you know, I'm a generation above you guys, and we're the generation that didn't really grow up with kind of much technology. So we're all kind of, all my friends, a lot of us. My age don't really know how to get around the internet. So, you know, there's kind of, I'm quite happy, you know, to be a bit like that, because it kind of blinkers some of the negative stuff that's out there. But you know, as I said earlier, I don't really know much about podcasts and things like that. You know, all this stuff is because I just kind of just I like it the old way when you just had four channels on TV and there was an on and off button and there wasn't a computer and I just had a pad and a pen. But, you know, so it's all there's so much information and that's what's scary, because you don't know how to kind of
And then you get like in a kind of endless loop.
Yeah, like, and I feel like you're in that loop.
Yeah, and it's really hard to get out of it. And you're like, why am I just scrolling and scrolling and scrolling, and my eyes are glazed over? I just need to get off.
But I think there's also like the way people are booking guests now is that they are also that they're booking like the people with really extreme views. So there's people you'll see getting booked again and again and again because they sit like someone like Katie Hopkins or whoever else, you know, whatever side of the spectrum you might fall on, like those are the guests that are going to get booked again and again. Also, whereas someone like you who's coming in and talking about the word debate, he's going, well, actually, I agree with this and I don't agree with that. They'll be like, oh,
the worst person for that. Because also I was thinking recently, another point was the fact that I think some journalists, you know, who might need the money, might write something like a lot of newspapers now sort of commission a journalist saying, this is the headline we want, can you write it? Like, I got asked to write something for CNN about Meghan Markle, and it was a headline I didn't agree with, and they'd offered me money to write it. And luckily, you know, that's not really how I make my living now. I don't need to write for these sorts of publications. But I just thought, God, someone else has gone written that now because they've been asked to. And again, it's extreme headline.
They don't care. You know, editors don't care, and they will. You know, they don't care about the effect that's going to have on someone's life, and if it's complete, you know, the lies and, you know, they did it, you know, when I was kind of going through my divorce, and they would just write really nasty headlines just that were completely untrue. And I would try and find out why. And they would say, because that's what the editor wants. They want to sell papers because, you know, nasty things about women and divorces sell papers. And you think, Yeah, but why do women want to read nasty things about other women? Why are they not more sisterly and supportive?
Why would you ever want to write that about someone?
Yeah. But it goes what you say about this whole thing, like people love to pit a woman against another woman. I think,
yeah, because like, a friend of mine got asked to go on Good Morning Britain to talk about parents and how much they should drink publicly, like whether it's okay to Instagram you having a bottle of wine, which obviously you can. But this other mum said that obviously she was totally against it, teetotal. And Anna, my friend who went on, she'd actually asked if her husband could go on and they said no, they wanted two women. Mm. And so it's things
everyone
like that.
Everyone loves a catfight, but the reality of it is, I actually find, like, in real life, women, like, are really supportive of each other in many ways. And like,
they actually bonded on air, and Piers Morgan hated
it. Was furious, yeah. Well, but you know what? Actually, saying that, we're all slightly guilty of it, because you know when you watch those, like, best moments of TV? Mm. Like, you do love a good fight. Like, what was the moment when Grace Jones slapped the presenter? Do you remember?
Was it... was that
who was that?
Russell... No.
It was like TV gold. It was amazing. And all like when the Sex Pistols were being interviewed and they were like, you dirty rotter, and it all got quite controversial. Like, those are the episodes that are going to get, those are the TV moments that are going to get played again and again and again in the kind of top TV moments. And they are entertaining.
But they were spontaneous and kind of, they deserved to have, there's something just spontaneous and real about them. Now it's like, you know, people are, their careers are kind of, they've decided to just be nasty and mean, and that's going to be their career. But I mean, I get upset at night if going to bed if I've been slightly negative or mean to somebody. And so I don't know how those people must feel. They must have some kind of conscience. I mean, that must be really affecting your psyche and not good to have.
Really
have.
Bizarre when you're like paying the bills from being mean about people. Very odd.
But I think that's what's so nice about something like a podcast. Like, you get to explore all the kind of ranges of the spectrum of opinion. And that's why I love doing it, because there's no one else kind of controlling or with an agenda. Like, it really is about getting a wide variety of opinions. So, moving on to what I wanted to get off my breast today. Is kind of based a little bit on something we discussed in season one. I think it was the episode when we were chatting to Gizzy Erskine about...
episode one, you can check
out. Episode one, season one. Thank you, Emma. You can go back and listen to it if you like. And we were talking about the sort of psychology of infidelity and how women tend to get blamed more than men. And the conversation went on a bit of a tangent, and I think we ended up talking about checking your partner's phone or sort of checking up on your partner to see whether they're cheating on you or not and is it ever okay. And I don't know what point in the conversation, but I think I was expressing some kind of like empathy and understanding for people who do it. And we got a comment in our rate and review section on iTunes, which I love getting the comments, the good and the bad, to be honest, because it's really nice to have, like, obviously it's really nice to have people saying supportive stuff, but also to get constructive criticism and get better. It's great. But there was one, and she was sort of saying, I can't believe that you all just thought it was absolutely fine to check your partner's phone. So I was like, okay, I've obviously like really misrepresented my point of view on that, but it's also quite an interesting topic. So what I wanted to kind of get off my rest was, is it ever okay to check your partner's phone or email or Facebook? And if it's not okay, but is it ever understandable? And I don't know, I personally feel like it's never a good thing, it's never healthy, and the person doing the checking, like, you're just going to create more issues for yourself. But I have an empathy for it, because I feel like people don't tend to feel the need to check up on their partner unless there's some insecurity there and some reason. And that is to do with the relationship between two people. So you're both responsible in a way for that, because obviously something... some dynamic has been created where one of the people in that relationship feels so insecure or so that they can't trust the other person that they need to do something which they possibly know is not the right thing to do.
For me, there's a difference between like snooping, but if my boyfriend borrowed my laptop today and I'm here and he's like on my laptop right now, he could be, and my emails pop up, I wouldn't mind because I've got nothing to hide. So I feel like I think there's a difference between like accidentally like seeing something, maybe you borrow someone's phone and something comes up, to actively going in and looking at someone's phone when they're in the shower or something.
I think if you're in a relationship and you're really suspicious of what your partner's doing, of course there's definitely a problem in the relationship, and if you're driven to snoop and look, it can be so dangerous for, you know, it can be so all-consuming and very, very toxic. And, you know, when I hear people reading people's diaries or going through mails or any of that kind of stuff, I understand, but it's so uncomfortable because you just, you know, nobody should be getting anybody's private information.
Yeah.
But, you know, there have been times in my life where, you know, I mean, I can say it now because I'm feeling in a good place and I'm feeling, but there's times where you just want to know what's happening and what's going on. But it is dangerous because you can also, you can read something and make it seem like there's something guilty going on.
Mm-hmm.
You can find something like looking through someone's blazer or jacket and find a receipt and go, why were they at that hotel? Or why were they there? Or why have they got that train ticket in their bag? It could be something completely innocent, but you'll, or if you're in that mindset anyway, you're going to find some, and you're going to drive yourself mad.
Yeah.
So I think you have to have some kind of discipline not to snoop and not to look and all those things, because it can drive you to insanity. And you know, I see it across the board with friends and you know, the younger generation, because I think as you're older, you kind of go through that, like maybe you shouldn't, you learn those lessons, don't you? And I kind of say to my kids, don't look, don't go, don't do that, don't go on Facebook, just let that go, because it's going to, it's going to drive you mad.
Well, the temptation's getting so much worse, isn't there? Because the temptation is so much worse these days, because you haven't just got someone's phone and like their mail and like their pockets, like you're saying. It's like there's Facebook, there's Instagram, there's Twitter, and it is so tempting to want to know, like, what is my partner talking about, like who are they communicating with? But like you said, it's such a dangerous game, because if you find something, firstly, it can be completely out of context. Secondly, it can be illegal. Like, you could end up finding out like work information that's like privileged, or, you know, data and things like that. Like, privacy is like a really important part of our lives. And also, even if you find out they've done something wrong, well, you've also done something wrong then. So you've kind of like, what do you do? Do you have to admit that you've done something wrong? And then you've kind of put yourself in a bad position as well. But I also, on the other hand, like, I've known friends of mine, for example, who've like spent years with someone who's, for example, being unfaithful with them, and they never knew. And then they found out like years later, and they'd wish that they'd found out earlier, because they feel like they wasted years of their life. And that's really sad too. But I think you're right. I think trying not to have the temptation. And I think maybe if you do feel the temptation, then like acknowledge there's an issue either with yourself and your own like security and trust issues, or in the relationship. And like maybe even just talk to your partner about it and say, like, I'm feeling really suspicious right now, and I want to know why. And I don't know whether it's me or us, but we have a problem. And I'm like, even want to check your phone. Like, I've been tempted to, and I don't want to go there, but I need to know from you, like, can I trust you? And if I can, then like, why am I feeling like this? Like, what's going on between us? And trying to, you know, whether it's with a therapist there or whether it's just the two of you, like really try and actually address that issue, because, and hopefully trust that the person would be honest with you, I guess.
I know, it's making a pact between the two of you. And then once you can do that and you both feel like you trust each other, the relationship can be really balanced and healthy. But when you don't trust that person, it's such a horrible place to be. I mean, there's been times where I've wanted to know where my partner is all the time. You wish you'd come be able to turn on that find my phone thing. But, you know, now I'm like, I'm so glad I don't feel like that, because it's so stressful. You've got to trust your
partner.
But
then once you've been burnt once, because I've been burnt, I found out that someone was cheating on me, and that everyone I knew apart from me. And I was, so on top of like the being cheated on thing, it was like the humiliation that everyone had known, and you feel like a fool. And once that's happened to you once, I found out because a friend told me, not from snooping, but once it happens to you once, like, those trust issues are there in you, and then it's like it can create like a really bad pattern of behavior of like suspicion and things like that. And that is something you have to work hard on yourself
to overcome.
Also, you don't want to get into that position where you check the phone, you read something, you get totally the wrong end of the stick, you then bring it up, and then they dump you or something because they can't trust you. Like, it could easily backfire. But
I just don't understand now, though, why, when somebody is cheating, why they do it. Because I've gone into relationships and said to people, like, I have been so broken by people being dishonest and cheating. Please, if you want to be in a relationship with me, can we just be honest? Can we just be completely, you know, fair and square? If you want to go off and you want to have an open relationship, or you don't want to just be faithful to me, just let me know, because I just would rather know. And they go, yeah, promise. And then they go off and do something. And then I'm like, I mean, it's so painful. And you see what that effect has on people throughout their lives. So, you know, also you've got to keep your kind of strength and independence and not let somebody completely kind of be able to not kind of kind of knock you over the edge.
Yeah. Mm. And what you said was really interesting, actually, Emma, at the beginning, because so there was a study and I think they like anonymously asked people, and I think it was something like 2/3 of people admitted to checking on their partner's communications in some way, whether it was emails, Facebook or phone or whatever. So it obviously is more common than we thought. But they, what they discovered is that in relationships where people, like you were saying with your laptop, actually don't care, like, so they're like, oh yeah, if you want to use my phone anytime, just use it, or yeah, no, here's my password for my emails, anytime you need to like check whatever, you know, feel free. In those relationships whereby there's no like secrecy at all, the other person then doesn't want to check at all, and that like removes that kind of desire, because they just go, well, you know, it's all, it's already open and trusting. So in a way, creating that kind of like
That openness, and
just making the other person feel safe by just saying, like, not necessarily like, if you want to check my text, go ahead, but like, you know, if you want to, if you need to use my phone anytime because whatever, your phone's out of battery or whatever else, like, no problem. Whereas I think if you're going to be like, don't use my phone, no, you can't touch it, then the other person's going to go, why? What's going on?
So, yeah, like when your partner goes to the loo and they take their phone, I'm always suspicious of that. Like, why won't you leave your phone on the table? And I noticed that. You know, I was seeing somebody and they basically, and there would be someone called Rose, someone like my accountant calling the whole time. It'd say my accountant or my brother. And it was obviously another woman that they just changed the name. And it took me about, I'm a bit slow, I'm a bit naive, a bit gullible. It took me about 2 years to work that. I'm like, why is your accountant calling at 2 a.m?
Just very, very financially like responsible. But I think that
so makes sense though, because if you just think there's nothing to worry about. And also I was thinking, how cute is it when like my auntie and uncle do this, when people have joint accounts, like joint emails? I'm like, no.
Well, so I think like, yeah, I think we all agree like it's not good. It's not healthy for you either to check. But I think if you are in a relationship with someone, like, be aware that it's like a natural human like desire to want to know in a way. And so like trying to create like a safe environment where the other person feels really like secure is two people's responsibility in a way. And if you find that your partner is checking on your phone, or if you're feeling like you want to check on your phone, like try and deal with it together as a couple.
I personally can't imagine a situation where I'd want to, just because like being in a relationship, isn't it about like knowing where each other are and telling each other everything? Like, I've never even thought about it.
But then maybe you've never been in a situation where you found out that someone's cheated on you and it was like devastating and you didn't know about it and you wish you'd known earlier.
Exactly, and that's why those things scar you.
And it can come from a young age, you know, it can come from parents. Like, you know, if you've got a mother or a father that was having an affair and it, you know, broke down the family or whatever, you know, that can also like set a precedent at a young age. So it's like, it's not okay. But again, I would never like condemn or judge anyone for it, because I just feel like in a way, like, let's look at why.
It's all about not judging.
Thank you so much Sadie, for being our amazing guest.
Lovely to have done this, girls.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode. Please don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss out on any other episodes of this podcast.
We've got a very special episode coming up next week with a brilliant guest. We'll be joined by activist and co-founder of the Pink Protest, the ever outspoken Grace Campbell. And we'll be talking about how to separate the artist from the art, and perhaps our favourite topic of the season, pubic hair.